It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length, members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again. And as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Daniel Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio this week is Vanessa DeZoltan, a non-denominational chaplain who co-hosts Harry Potter and the Sacred Text and its spinoff show, Women of Harry Potter. She also has a new podcast, Hot and Bothered. Vanessa, welcome and congratulations on your many, many shows.
Thank you. I'm the only one who does any work on any of them, so I deserve all of the congratulations. It's just me.
I cannot relate. Yeah. That is so exciting.
Thanks. I was kidding. There are just like teams and teams of people.
I did feel that came through. I did not think you were trying to do the like little red hen thing for the group project. But thank you for being willing to add a fourth one to your roster.
Yes. I hope to be so charming and helpful to everyone that I take over from you, Daniel. I am the new Dear Prudence.
You can be charming or helpful, but rarely both.
Believe me, it's rarely either.
And I'll do the other one. So normally I let the guest read the first letter, but today I am so eager to read this one myself that I'm going to take it.
Do it.
It's a lot.
Oh, man. When I read it, I wrote back to you asking if I can swear.
Yes.
That was my immediate response.
Which is always, always, I think, yes. I don't know that I've ever listened to a podcast where people weren't allowed, although maybe I just didn't know. But yes, this was designed for a little bit of pressure-relieving cursing. And I think this is a great example of someone who perhaps thinks they are being charming and helpful, and they are, in fact, being neither. That's just a little preview of what my read is on this. And here we go. The subject is Plain Jane's mom. Dear Prudence, my daughter is kind, intelligent, and loving. She recently graduated from medical school and announced her engagement to another doctor. I should be thrilled, but I can't shake the feeling she's being used. Why? Her fiancé is drop-dead gorgeous. He could be John Hamm's brother. My daughter, who I love more than anyone else in the world, is a lovely girl and a catch, but she's very average looking. I feel deeply uneasy about what Bill's hidden motives might be. I want to believe in true love and beauty not being skin deep, but I've been around too long and I'm not dumb. We met Bill recently, and he seems like a nice enough guy, but I can't shake this bad feeling. How do I talk to my daughter about this without hurting her feelings? So I'll start with, I think, the obvious, which is you cannot talk to your daughter about this without hurting her feelings. And I would, in fact, strongly advise you not to talk to your daughter about this.
Yeah, my answer is don't. First of all, who cares what you think about this topic? She did not ask for your opinion. And even I really tried to assume the best of intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say this mom is motivated by love and concern for her daughter and not by projecting her own self-loathing or some thing. Even then, there's just like no strategy here. Like, what could you possibly say that wouldn't end with your daughter breaking up with him and believing that she doesn't deserve somebody who looks a certain way? That's the best case scenario.
I think especially that bit about like, what do you think he could be using her for? Like, unless you have neglected to mention that your daughter is an heiress, which I think you probably would have dropped in there if that were a factor. And like, she's paying off all of his medical school bills. Like, what do you think he's going to use her for? Or do you just kind of want an excuse to tell your daughter, who it sounds like is very smart, and that might potentially activate something for you, that you don't think she's very pretty?
I have theories as to what she thinks.
But yeah, I think a great way to kind of check your own motives here is like, so what do I think he's using her for? And if the answer is, I can't really think of anything, I'm just worried he thinks she's as average looking as I do, then I think that that might be a sign that this has everything to do with you and nothing to do with Bill. And I would also encourage you to perhaps remind yourself that you might not be the best judge of your own daughter's fuckability.
Well, our president has taught us all that we can judge our daughter's fuckability.
Jesus.
But sorry. But I also, so I'm again, like, trying to assume good intentions here. She just met Bill for the first time. Maybe she just, like, needs to ask her daughter a question like, what do you love about Bill? Like, maybe she doesn't feel super involved in this engagement.
And, I have, like, to say, I think I know why. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think it is often good to try to read best intentions, but I also think I do want to engage with what I feel like is the kind of obvious here in this letter, which is that clearly, my guess is this is not the first time in your life you have indirectly communicated to your daughter that you think she's not especially nice looking. And I can certainly imagine a number of reasons why your daughter might keep you at arm's length when it comes to her personal life.
Yeah. Is this too much reading into it? Don't you think that she's saying, like, maybe he's gay and that's what he's using her for? Don't you feel like that's a subtext? Because literally, what else could this, like, ignorant woman think that this, like, guy that sounds like he has a fine career would be using her, like, daughter that sounds like she's the same career for? Unless she's an heiress.
I didn't go to that as my, like, number one read.
Okay.
It didn't feel like the most obvious, but I feel like the subtext here is, I don't understand why he's attracted to her. And that could certainly be a part of it. But I just, you know, I don't want to go too far down the roads
totally.
Of, like, encouraging her to get more specific in her paranoid fantasies, because I just don't think that they're based in anything other than her own issues. So I would really just say on this one, do not say anything to your daughter, but say a lot of things to a therapist.
I mean, say things to your daughter like, ugh, you guys are such a cute couple. I'm so happy for you. Can't wait to dance at your wedding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to encourage the letter writer right now to say a lot of things that she doesn't mean in order to try to cover up for something. So I would stick to certainly say, like, I'm glad to meet Bill. I'd love to get to know him better. If you think you are capable of having a conversation where you ask truly neutral, non-loaded questions about, like, tell me a little bit more about how you two met or what you like about each other. But I also suspect that right now the letter writer is so convinced of her particular mode of relating to her daughter that I worry she would ask them in a loaded way. So I would say your first order of business really, really needs to be find a therapist with the stated goal of, like, I kind of have a history of putting down my daughter's appearance, and I want to think a little bit more about where that might be coming from, what that says about my feelings about my own appearance, what that says about my ideas around her value as a romantic partner. I'm not proud of myself. Like, I just like, John Hamm's a nice looking guy, but I thought the 30 Rock bubble episode was taking it a little far. And I just want to wonder, too, like, maybe you have the bar a little bit lower for men. And so it's like, oh, he's a doctor and kind of nice looking. He's indescribably beautiful and a catch beyond all possible catches. But a woman doctor, you know, average looking, plain Jane, who could possibly see anything in her, who could possibly be attracted to her? Like, to me, I just... I don't I don't buy it. I don't buy your version of events. And I think that this is coming, you know, this call is coming from inside the house.
I just want to, again, like, echo the therapy thing because of this line. I want to believe in true love and beauty not being skin deep, but I've been around too long and I'm not dumb. Like, that, yeah, that is you about you. Mm-hmm. That is not about your daughter.
Yeah, that idea of, like, you know, I've been around a long enough time and I'm smart enough to know that if outsiders don't immediately assess a couple as being, like, the exact same numerical value on a 1 to 10 scale of hotness, that it's automatically suspicious, fraudulent, someone's trying to game the system, someone's using the other person. Like, you don't say anything about, like, they barely know each other, or he's asking for a lot of money, or I don't like the way that he treats her. It's literally just, he's handsome, and I think my daughter is just a 5. And that, to me, says this is based in your own insecurities and not in reality.
This is the kind of thing that, like, my fictional, in my head, great-grandmother might have said.
I'm glad that your great-grandmother is fictional, then.
Right. I mean, it just seems like such an outdated, outmoded way of thinking about partnership. To think that there's any sort of objective standard that can be gauged from the outside as to what makes for an equal couple just seems, like, generationally outdated.
Yeah, and just this idea of, like, I just feel so much sympathy for her daughter. There's just this sense of, like, she's kind, intelligent, loving, has a great fiancé, you know, is, you know, just got through medical school, or which is amazing. It's a hell of an accomplishment. And then to have it all just, like, pinned to, but you know what, looks-wise, just average. What I'm getting from this is there's kind of nothing that your daughter can do that's good enough. And I feel like you probably send her a lot of articles about improving your posture or, like, makeup tips.
Weight loss. Yeah.
And I just hate that for her. Yeah.
Wellness. She gets a lot of wellness articles.
I hope not. I hope that that's not the case. Yeah. This is worth doing a lot of introspection and soul searching over. You should do it with a therapist, not with your daughter. You know, if you want to get to know Bill better, ask more than you know, ask more questions than you talk. Be open to a lot of possibilities. And when that voice inside your head says your daughter's probably being taken advantage of because a good looking doctor could never want to be with her, just tell that voice to shut up for a minute and be open to the possibility that you are not right here.
Yeah.
I think this is one of those situations where it's like, I don't know, I got to trust my gut. My gut's really saying something here. And I think you have reason to believe your gut is wrong.
So that is my question. What if her gut is telling her something about this is off, and the only thing that her lizard brain is telling her is it's about looks? Right? Because I feel like sometimes I'll be like, my gut is telling me something here. No, and I can talk myself out of it. And usually, like, my gut is an idiot, so my gut is just scared all the time. But I do wonder, right, like, if she thinks something about this is off and the only thing that I can judge it by is this external factor.
Yeah.
But, to your point, that should be figured out in therapy, not by talking to your daughter about the fact that she's a plain Jane.
I would just say here, I think it's really clear where that, like, quote unquote gut instinct is coming from. And that is some version of my daughter's not good looking enough to be happy. And that tells me everything about the underlying assumptions here. I do not believe that there is. I think the reason she probably doesn't know her daughter's fiance very well is she has probably either consciously or unconsciously communicated some version of this assumption to her daughter a lot. And as a result, her daughter keeps her at a little bit of an arm's length. And that's exactly why she's not super, super close with her daughter's fiance. And I think it will only improve your relationship with your daughter if you go to therapy and find ways to address this part of yourself that is neither loving nor kind nor open-minded. And I wish you luck with that, because I don't want you to continue hurting your daughter or pushing her away or pushing, you know, her fiance away, because there's a part of you that just says there's only a certain type of attractiveness that deserves this sort of happiness. And I know my daughter doesn't have it and couldn't possibly. That is, it's not a good road to go down.
It's also just not a great way to walk through the world, right? Like, mm-hmm. imagine walking through the world judging every couple based, like, just judging people based entirely on appearance. I don't know.
And not just judging them based on appearance, but assuming that, like, I have the universal standard of beauty.
Right.
And no one could possibly reasonably disagree with me.
And it's John Hamm.
And it's John Hamm and my daughter. Like, those are the two poles of the hotness scale. yeah, there's lots to unpack here. And I hope that you get to, again, with a therapist. And maybe a therapist who is able to help specifically with body image issues, appearance issues, you know, giving certain weight to certain types of appearances and not to others. That would be a good specialty to look out for.
Some ideas about social constructs around attraction.
And just the idea that you might, again, not be the best judge of how hot your daughter is to somebody who wants to presumably sleep with and or marry her.
And like maybe have children that look like her, right? Like, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I think the hidden motives you should be worried about are not Bill's, but yours. And that's kind of the last word I've got on that one.
Yep, well said.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And this is another mom problem.
Yep.
Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
It's your turn to read. I didn't mean to spoil.
No. I often like to spoil letters. And, you know, we sometimes get lots of, you know, husbands and uncles and bosses and best friends and siblings. So, you know, every once in a while we just have a mom day.
Yep.
And that's what today is. Today is that. So
Ooh.
The subject is water park freakout. Dear Prudence. After being in a car accident as a kid, I lost two toes on my left foot and I have scars up to my knee. It doesn't hinder me physically, but I was bullied badly in school and only recently got comfortable wearing summer clothes and sandals, mostly because of my boyfriend, Paul. I've met his family, including his three younger sisters, who are 9, 12, and 13 years old, and spent last Christmas with them. Recently, my boyfriend and I picked them up to treat them to a visit to a water park. It was the first time they'd seen my bare legs. I had anticipated questions, but not what happened. As we were driving, the oldest one noticed the scars on my leg and shrieked, "What happened to you?" I didn't get a chance to explain before the girls exploded and egged each other on. One started to gag, and the other begged me to cover up with a towel before she, quote, threw up. I started to cry. Paul got furious, turned the car around, ordered the girls out of the car, and then took me out to a restaurant and comforted me. Later on, the girls offered me a rehearsed apology and I accepted. I figured that was the end of it, until Paul's mom pulled me to the side, lectured that all of this could have been avoided if I had covered up more, and said that it was my responsibility not to make people uncomfortable. I didn't know what to say. I just nodded. I thought she liked me. I haven't told Paul, and I'm afraid of what will happen if I do. I feel completely exposed in front of his family, even if I'm covered up. What should I do?
Oh boy, do I have thoughts.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go ahead.
I think mostly I just want to say, first of all, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. This sounds unbelievably painful and upsetting and shocking. And I'm so sorry that they did that and that the mom doubled down on it. I'm also so glad that Paul is just in your corner.
I know. Paul sounds like the best.
He responded in the right way. It was appropriate for him to display anger. It was appropriate for him to cut the trip short. It was appropriate for him to then go focus on you and how you were doing. I'm really, really glad that you have a partner like him.
Yep. So, like, the what should I do? Tell Paul for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, this, it sounds like this is a relationship that you're caring about, thinking about the future. And so navigating his family isn't going to go away. And you have to be honest with him about what happened. And yeah, the two of you have to figure out how to handle this together. And then, I mean, the other thing is, I mean, tell the mom that this really all could have been avoided if she raised children who respected other people's bodies. But I know that I used to teach middle school, so I know that middle schoolers can basically be monster people. But the fact that they weren't given a lecture on to offer a sincere apology was already a flag for me. That mm-hmm. apology should have been like, we talked to our mom, we told her what happened, or Paul told our mom what happened, and we really thought about it. And, like, that would have made me feel so bad if somebody did that to me. Like, I just think that children need to be learning these lessons. And it's – I feel bad for these kids also. They are being taught to be hateful and rude about other people's bodies.
Right. And that's so hard, I think, in a situation like this when the oldest one is 13. So it's like both – there's responsibility for their own behavior, but also you want to think of them as, you know – still growing into the people that they will become. So you want to give them opportunities to learn and grow and develop sympathy and compassion and respect, and seeing the ways in which, you know, clearly their mom communicated to them on some level. You only have to offer a perfunctory apology, but really, it's your brother's girlfriend who's making things difficult. And so the lesson that they are learning from that is not a good one. But I totally agree. I think you need to tell Paul. And I think my read there was that the reason was she's afraid of what will happen if she does is because she knows Paul will defend her and get angry. And yeah. She already feels guilty. Like she's internalized a little bit of the mom's message of like, this was kind of on you for not warning everybody about your body. And so as a result, she feels self-conscious. And I get that. But I just think that you should gently acknowledge that feeling within yourself, but don't let it dictate your actions, because this is really important. I think Paul should be having conflict with his mother and siblings about this. And, if the situation were reversed, I think you would want Paul to tell you.
Yeah. And I know that the letter writer intellectually knows this and that you've hinted at it, but it was not your responsibility to make other people feel comfortable with your body. Like, that is not your responsibility. Just extenuated out. What if, if this was about race or gender, right? Like, this is not, it is not your responsibility to make other people feel comfortable in that way.
Yeah, and I just think, just by itself, it is what it is, it would have been totally reasonable. Like, you went in with, I think, a very reasonable set of expectations, which is like, they're kids, they haven't seen me without like pants and shoes on before. They might have a question, and I'm prepared to answer like a kid's question about my legs. And then I think too, the way in which you saw them egg each other on, like on some level, I think they knew we need a little group consensus in order to be maximally cruel. And we're going to like push each other onto more and more hyperbolic reactions because we kind of know this isn't okay. And so we need the cover of like a group attack in order to do it. So again, I would just really, really stress, you know this, but like remind yourself deep within your soul that you have like that. It's just horrible to say, well, if you want people not to be cruel about scars you got from a car accident, you should, you know, apologize for wearing sandals to a water park or cover up your body as if it's something to be ashamed of. That's horrible. And I'm so, so, so sorry that that is what your boyfriend's mom communicated to you, especially after her daughters had already like just gone off the deep end being cruel to you.
Nice pun on the water park.
I'm truly sorry for that.
The other line that just makes me so sad is that I thought she liked me.
Yeah.
And it's, people who are being judgmental and cruel will do it despite the fact that they, quote unquote, like you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure that his mom does like you.
Right.
And is just, you know, I don't want to guess at the reasons, but is just being cruel and completely off about this.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good point because it is true. She can both like you and genuinely believe that somebody who has scars has a responsibility to keep them covered at all time, lest they invite mockery. And that would just mean that she both likes you and has really cruel opinions.
And there's just this theme with this letter and the first letter between women judging each other's bodies so harshly, which is just so troubling to me. Rather than women celebrating each other's bodies and saying, you know, scars are beautiful and my daughter is happy and any number of other things, women are judging each other's bodies. And I know that that is not mostly what people are, what women are doing. But in these two letters, it's just so upsetting.
Right. And not even like if they can't even get to that, to just say like, I don't need to say anything here. And I think couching it as like, hey, I'm kind of doing you a favor, you know, like, let me give you a little tough love about the real world. And in the real world, you can't trust that your fiance loves you because you're only, quote, average looking. Or, you know, of course you should expect that, like, children should say, I'm going to throw up at the sight of you if you don't keep your legs covered at all times. Like, their version of what they think the real world is that they're cluing you in on is one where you can't trust other people. You can invite cruelty by failing to be sufficiently ashamed of yourself. And you shouldn't ask to be treated with respect because that's asking too much. And that's very, very sad. And it's very, very good to reject that version of reality. So I think talk to Paul, you know, do it at a time when you know you're not going to be seeing his family anytime really soon. And certainly if you want to share with him, like, I both want your help and support in this, and I'm also worried and I feel a little anxious at the prospect of coming between you and your family. I hope that when you talk to them about this, you can find a way to do so calmly and firmly. Like, if you want to defend and support me, I hope we can find ways to talk about it that are not being maximally cruel back. Do you know what I mean? Like, not telling him exactly how to do it, but saying, like, I don't want to, get into a screaming match about this. And I hope that you'll bear that in mind.
Right. But I think that, you know, that's the way that we train each other in relationships about how to take care of each other, right? It's like, I want to tell you something that happened, and here is how you can best take care of me. Like, what within this range feels comfortable to you? But I think it's completely within the letter writer's right to say, you know, it would make me really uncomfortable if this was a screaming match the next time we were all together.
Right.
And to say, this would be the best case scenario for me. Mm-hmm. And then I think it should happen with you in a miniskirt and sandals.
Oh, I think you should. I totally agree. But I also think you shouldn't have to be there for it.
Oh, no. I know. I was kidding.
Yeah, no, that is, I do appreciate that just reminder. Maybe this is like as a mental image for the letter writer to keep in mind when she talks to Paul about it. But yeah, one of the things that will be good, I think, is like the reason the first time felt so painful was because it all happened in the moment. So he didn't kind of have the opportunity to stop and reflect. And part of what will be good about this is you can both take a little time to calm down. So like if he needs to like write a really angry letter and not send it, or if he wants to go like, you know, turn on the shower and scream or punch a pillow or something, like something that kind of gets out his first really, really just angry reaction, so that when he does talk to his mom, it's not in the first throes of, I just want to hurt you as much as you've hurt me and my girlfriend. And that will be useful. And, you know, think really carefully about what you need. And if part of what you need right now is to just not be around his family, that's not punitive or overly sensitive. That's a really understandable need for safety, you know, like unless and until they can all get to a place of really understanding what they did wrong, deeply regretting it, demonstrating an ability to respect your boundaries for a sustained amount of time, only then should you consider whether or not you'd be comfortable having like a very brief hello to them. And if they cannot meet those standards, you do not need to be around them.
Well, she says it, right? She says, I feel completely exposed in front of his family, even if I'm covered up. And so until that stops being true, like, I don't think you have to be around his family.
Yeah.
like feeling completely exposed in front of people who have been cruel to you, that is like not something that you have to willingly submit to.
Yeah.
So yeah, until something changes, you know,
yeah,
sit barefoot at home.
Be around people who care about you. I hope you can talk about this with your friends. Hope you can talk about this with Paul. And I just hope that you are able to take the space that you need. And I'm just, again, I'm so sorry that this happened. That sounds absolutely just, I would be shocked and mortified in that moment if that had happened to me. And I totally understand just the sense of, I thought they liked me. I feel really shell-shocked.
I was embarrassed when my stepdaughter in front of a bunch of friends pointed out how my hair was graying. She said to me, I can really see your gray hair right now, and it does not look good.
Oh.
But she was six.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and even that hurt my feelings.
Of course.
And she was also wrong, because my gray hair looks awesome. But I can't imagine how upsetting this would be.
Yeah. Gray hair does look awesome. Look no further than Bonnie Raitt and her amazing streak of gray.
And that's how mine is growing in.
That is so cool.
It's like... Thank you.
Congratulations.
I know. I really appreciate it.
Do you want to talk about worms for a few minutes?
So, Danny, I think that this should be the beginning of a rom-com. This is like, that is my theory on this upcoming letter.
Please go ahead and read it.
Okay. Subject. How do I tell my friend I think her kid has worms? Dear Prudence, I'm staying at a friend's house for a week. This morning, I used the bathroom after someone else in the family had just finished, and I noticed a maggoty-looking little white worm wriggling across the edge of the seat. I flushed it out of panic, but some Google searches made me think it might have been a pinworm, which is apparently a parasite kids commonly get. I haven't had any symptoms, and her son is six, which makes me think it's probably from him. My friend and I are close, but not so close that I feel comfortable gracefully addressing the situation. Also, I've had a slight crush on her, and I'm worried if I tell her and they all get checked out by a doctor and discover no one has worms, and therefore it might have been me, I might actually die of shame. I'm here for two more days. Help.
This is so charming.
I know. I just tell your friend... And profess your love. That's
okay. That would be the most, like, extremely suave. If you could pull that off,
right?
It would be true love, and or you would be the most suave human being ever to live.
I'm sorry. Do you not think that, like, poop conversations are the best meet cute situations ever? No?
It's certainly an opportunity for increased intimacy. And I agree that it should be done with a pretty light tone. Like, you gotta be able to chat about this kind of thing. Like, my guess is if your kid has a six-year-old, they are used to having conversations about poop. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's probably a lot less squeamish about it than you might feel as the guest in her home. So if it's me, I would just be like, hey, there's no great way to preface this. So I'll just tell you, I saw a worm on the toilet, and I think that you're kid might have pinworms, and I'm sorry to be talking about worms with you, but you should mention it to your pediatrician.
Also, as somebody who fell in love with someone in part because they were such a good parent, I just think that this would make me fall in love with this person, that like they were so concerned about my child's health that they talked about something really awkward with me. I would find it so sexy if somebody was like, this is gross. I'm sorry to bring it up, but I just want to let you know I'm mildly concerned that your kid might have a totally normal kind of worms. I saw it and I Googled it, and your kid's perfectly healthy. There's just, you know, a little pill that they would have to take. And maybe it's me. Who knows? But I'm worried.
Yeah, like I'll also go to the doctor just to double check.
Yeah, let's all go to the doctor and do poop tests together.
I think that last one is maybe wait and gauge her reaction first. But I agree that would be an ideal if you could just get everyone on board and she was just super like, oh, my goodness, sorry you had to see that in the bathroom. Let's all go down to the doctor and, yeah, that would be ideal. If she's slightly cooler than that, but it's just like, oh, I'm embarrassed. Thank you for telling me. I'm so sorry. I hope that everything else during your stay has been good and that there are no worms anywhere else in the house.
As maggot free as possible.
Yeah, I want to help our letter writer have reasonable expectations, and I don't want to promise.
Sorry.
If you tell her, she will say that is the sexiest thing I've ever heard. I love you. Let's go out. That might need to be a separate conversation. But yeah, I think you just got to admit it. Tell her what you saw. Tell her you feel a little bad bringing it up. Freely name the thing that you're most uncomfortable about, which is just
yes.
Like, by the way, I will head to the doctor too. Could be me, in which case, what an embarrassing conversation this will have been. And then you two can laugh about it. Like, you sound pretty close. I don't think, especially if she's the parent of a young child, that she's going to be like, oh, this is horrible. I can't believe you said the word worm to me in my own home. Get out, get out, get out.
Yeah. No, and I agree. In these situations, I think complete and utter truth is the way to go. It's like, this is why I'm embarrassed. This is what I saw. This is like, go meta with the truth. Is the way to do it. But also kiss.
I mean.
No? Okay.
I do want them to kiss. But my worry would be if you kiss too soon. Look, I tend to let I dare not wait upon I dare, like the cat in the adage. I don't know how to say the word adage. Adage?
I don't know.
Adage?
Adage.
Adage. That sounds right. My producer just looked at me and was like nodding very vigorously after looking kind of skeptical for my last couple of attempts. At any rate, I would want one more green light before I tried to kiss someone during a conversation about worms.
Oh, consensually.
No, of course. I didn't mean to suggest
kiss.
You were implying just grabbing her and going for it. I would just be like, I don't know. I think if that conversation goes well and you two can kind of laugh about it, you will have a slightly better sense of whether or not you're getting the green light in other areas.
Also, you sound like an adorable person who like Googled this.
That's very thoughtful.
And
yeah.
Is like, oh, it's really common in kids, like that you aren't grossed out. I don't know. I just think you sound lovely.
Yeah. And certainly I think anytime somebody is like, I love you, I love your kid, I want to make sure that if you have any, parasites that you get them all handled, that's usually a pretty great way into someone's affection. So good luck. I hope that you two do fall in love and that none of you ever get pinworms again.
Yes. And that Mindy Kaling writes the rom-com.
One can only hope. Anyways. Back to something lighthearted, which is so nice. We get to close on an easy, breezy cover girl kind of an answer, which is just like, how do you live together with somebody well?
Oh, I'm so glad you think this is easy.
I think it's going to affect a lot and it won't be resolved overnight. But it's not like I just found out my
cancer.
Friend doesn't care about my cancer kind of hard. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
This is like garden variety. Like, we love each other, but living with another person is really hard and we have super different expectations. And, I think there's room for both of them to try to meet each other in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always good. So,
subject: weirdly picky girlfriend. Dear Prudence, I've been dating Clara for over a year and we recently moved in together. Mostly it's fine, but we're very different eaters. I'm fine eating leftovers for days at a time. There was a week back in grad school where I had the exact same breakfast, lunch, and dinner just because those were the meals that were the cheapest to make. Clara, on the other hand, hates leftovers. If we go to a restaurant and she didn't finish her meal, even if she loved it, I'll be the one to take it home because she gets grossed out by the idea of reheating it. I've told her that we should just cook for ourselves because we're so different, but she insists that we cook together. It's fun occasionally, but she wants to cook together nearly every day. I don't see the point in making a meal from scratch when there's multiple things that I can reheat quickly instead of spending 20 minutes or more cooking. We haven't fought about this exactly, but she doesn't like it when I don't want to cook with her, usually saying I'm weird for wanting to eat leftovers. It also doesn't help that a lot of her recipes she got from her parents, who used to cook for a family of 7, and Clara hasn't figured out how to properly scale it down to 2 people. So there's at least 3 days' worth of leftovers I can eat instead of letting it waste. I know that I won't be able to change this quirk of hers, but how can I get her to stop the snark when I don't cook with her every day? I have many thoughts and feelings, but you thought it was easy.
I'm now eating my words. I guess I just mean
leftover eating your words.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Obviously, this is something that affects your day-to-day life. And you both have really different ideas about what's the right thing to do here. But it also sounds like this is sort of like a first time living together. Don't really know how to talk about how do we cook together. Don't know how to compromise. The letter writer's first attempt at compromise was just like, let's never share a meal, like, which understandably did not work, right? Like, for various reasons, your partner's like, I didn't move in with you because I, you know, don't want to share meals with you. That's not going to work for me exactly. But you, I would love to hear your thoughts here.
I mean, first of all, just like, as a vegetarian who cares a lot about the environment, food waste in America is a real issue.
It is, totally.
And so I'm like, I did research on numbers.
Aww.
I don't think that that's necessarily the best way to like come in and have this type of conversation with her. I think that the thing to do is try to set the tone for how the two of you will have conversations about compromise. But food waste is real and it creates methane and America is terrible. American households toss out 150,000 tons of food each day. That's a pound of food per person per day. It is a crime. And leftovers are a good thing. Eat them all. Don't throw away food.
I think that is absolutely an important thing here, which is that, like, she might never love leftovers. But in that case, I think it's important to say, like, it's good to not waste the maximum amount of food. And so let's talk about ways that if you are determined never to eat leftovers, we can adapt our approach to preparing meals. Like, that might look like sometimes having a lot of little snacks on hand. That you can kind of cobble together into a one and done meal, and that doesn't involve like cooking a big old casserole and then flinging all of it out of the window. But if she's like, look, some nights I would like to cook together, but I don't want leftovers, that means either it's important for her to take responsibility for cutting down the amount of servings in a given recipe. And or also having on hand stuff like some tomatoes that you can slice up into a salad and like a thing of cottage cheese or a thing of, you know, beans or whatever that you can throw together a quick meal that doesn't have leftovers as a result on the other side.
As I know you have done in the past as a listener of this podcast, peanut butter and fingers.
Peanut butter and fingers. Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do sometimes.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be joyless. You can, you know, make like attractive little snacky type meals. But yeah, I agree with you that there's both the subject of like totally understand why you would want to eat with your partner. But the request of like every night we should be making meals for seven and then you are somehow responsible for eating all the leftovers because I won't, but I'm going to want to make a brand new dinner tomorrow night, thus creating more leftovers faster than the rate at which you can eat them. It's like living in a bad word problem.
Danny, you're not a little bit red flagging over the so far it's been fine, which doesn't sound great, or mostly it's fine. And she says, I'm weird for wanting to eat leftovers. That sounds like not that excited and name calling.
Yeah.
Very early in a rooming situation.
To me, this feels, so this is a romantic relationship and a rooming situation.
Right.
It does sound
a romantic rooming situation.
Yeah. I absolutely agree that this sucks and it needs to stop. But I also think that the first move here is to have a direct conversation with her about it. And if she doesn't respond to that, then it's time to like escalate a little bit. So I would say the first conversation needs to be like, hey, I get that we have different approaches to food and to leftovers, and I'm not trying to pressure you into reheating stuff. That said, it's not weird to eat leftovers. This isn't like a strange quirk that I invented. And you need to stop like criticizing me for doing it. I'm not ever making you eat these leftovers, so all I'm asking you to do is stop giving me a hard time when I do. I need you to be able to do that. And making that just like a really clear request. Like, can you do that for me? Sure hope so.
And the only thing I'll say about that is that I find in my partnership that it is best that we have conversations about tense things not near the time of the tense thing.
Right.
So it's like, don't have that conversation as you're making your grocery list or as you're starting to cook. Maybe like on a Sunday morning walk, like, hey, I want to talk more generally about dinners. Because doing it right when everybody is hungry, I feel like the stakes feel high and it starts to feel like a metaphor. And like you want to avoid it feeling like a metaphor and just come at her with numbers. Like, this is the amount of money we could save in a year, mm-hmm. and we could go to Hawaii with that money.
Yeah.
And then take me to Hawaii.
I think that's also just a really good idea in terms of like setting aside some time to say like, hey, I've noticed that this has been a problem for a little while when you are not about to prepare dinner. I think that's absolutely right. I think mostly, I don't mean to suggest that like, I think this is no big deal. It mostly just sounds like maybe first time living together with a partner, certainly totally. First time living with this person. Here's an unexpected thing that doesn't work for us. How do we talk about it? And I think it's going to be better for you, letter writer, to say both, I need you to stop giving me a hard time about this. And I also want you to acknowledge that it's important to me that we not waste food and we need to meet somewhere in the middle as a sort of like, I sort of just assumed we'd be on the same page about this. And when we weren't, I said, well, let's just never eat together and see if that'll work. Again, not to be too hard on you. Like, I totally relate to that.
No.
And I can totally see myself doing it because if there's one thing love, it's avoiding conflict.
That's why I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, this doesn't work. My partner and I are terrible at picking each other up from the airport. Mm-hmm. And so we literally just don't do it anymore.
That's great. So, as you know, yeah. Billy Crystal had a whole monologue about that in When Harry Met Sally.
Yes, he
did. Classic for a reason. But yeah, I think and offering forms of compromise, like what if there are a couple of nights a week where what I do is reheat a leftover thing for myself and you assemble something that is like, look, there are whole like TV shows dedicated to like semi homemade meals, right? Like Sandra, what's her name, made a whole career out of that. Rachel Ray, too. I'm very embarrassed that I cannot remember gay icon. Sandra Lee, semi homemade meals with Sandra Lee. Like, there are tons of ways to assemble like, you know, a quick dinner that are not either eating leftovers or making a boeuf bourguignon from scratch or what have you. So some version of like, some nights I'm going to want to eat leftovers, but I understand wanting to eat together. Let's prepare something at the same time, but not like totally cook. Let's pick like one night a week where we make a scaled down dinner together that does not result in like three Tupperware containers full of leftovers. And try to see how that goes before we make any other big changes.
Hear, hear.
And yeah, if you make that request and she keeps harping on it, what would be your next move? How would you more strongly respond?
I guess the like 30,000 foot conversation that I would have is, why are we judging each other for choices that are about preference and not morality, although I do think food waste is about morality, so this is a bad example.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think like, hey, we're gonna have a lot of conflicts over like if this is gonna be a lifelong or like multi-year relationship, conflicts are gonna come up. Like, hair is gonna get caught in the, you know, in the sink. What is the word I'm looking for? The
sink hair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, yeah, is there a word for hair?
The drain.
Oh, sure.
Drain.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, like we're going to have different habits and different standards for all sorts of things, from cleanliness to food to any number of other things, how the bed should get made, anything. And so what I would like to do is for us to figure out a really constructive and loving way to have these conversations.
Yeah.
And like maybe it's like during our once a month dinner out, we have 10 minutes where we're like, okay, like, this is something we can do better. But name-calling and judging are, like, not the best ways to go into – I just really don't like it when people judge each other for things that are preferences,
yeah,
rather than facts.
And I think that that's a really good point that is worth bringing up, too, like, just as a bigger picture issue. Like, if we do stuff that we disagree about – I want to be able to talk about it, but I really don't want you to bring it up in a way that's like a lot of little digs. And I've, yeah, noticed that you've been doing it here. My worry is that in the future, if we disagree about something else, that will be how you communicate to me that something's bothering you. I don't want you to do that to me. Again, that kind of like, Can we agree that we will do our best when something is troubling us to either decide, do I want to ask my partner to do something different, or can I let this go? Because when you make those little digs, it just, you know, it's unpleasant. It kind of hurts my feelings. It feels mean. And I don't want to talk to each other like that.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, be a little inquisitive, because sometimes, you know, I've been very judgmental about food waste, but sometimes people don't like leftovers for a really good reason. You know, my grandparents grew up during the Depression. And sure. So my mom is, like, very weird about leftovers because her mother used to serve her borderline spoiled food because my grandmother couldn't throw anything away, right? So, like, sometimes there is, like, generational or, like, childhood reasons why somebody doesn't like leftovers, or they don't like leftovers from the microwave and prefer it to be heated in the oven. Or, like, I think going into these conversations with curiosity is a good thing, and not being like, hey, weirdo, why don't you like leftovers?
Right. But it does seem like this letter writer is not the one bringing that energy. Like, it sounds like the letter writer has actually been pretty open-minded about, like, look, if you don't like leftovers, fine. I'll take over leftover duty.
Right.
So I'm not too worried that the letter writer is going to start being dismissive or sarcastic. I think this person sounds very sincere and, like, I don't really understand why my partner is bringing all this snark to this conversation. And so I think it'll just be really good to ask her to stop. And that, I think, again, is a good litmus test for how she's willing to approach conflict, because it may just be that she has not yet realized, like, oh, this is actually not a very constructive way to go about getting what I want or talking about what I need. But if she's just like, nope, it's great, and I'm going to keep being an asshole about the microwave, then I think the next move is to start saying, like, when she does it, like, you know that I don't like this and it hurts my feelings. I don't know why you keep doing it. And then, like, again, if the continues leaving the house, eventually reassessing whether or not you want to live together. But all that would be a little ways down the road. I don't think that's where you need to go to right away.
I agree.
And I wish you good luck. Leftovers are delicious. And it's the food you liked yesterday.
Leftovers are an opportunity.
Yeah. You can make little pancakes out of mashed potatoes. And now you have crispy mashed potatoes, which is an ideal situation.
Yeah, and then you put some peanut butter on those, and you die happy.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, it's good to get a sense for, like, how much food do I actually eat every week, and if I'm routinely buying way, way, way too much stuff at the store and then letting all of my aspirational produce go bad, it's good to try to cut back on all my aspirational produce.
Did you coin the term aspirational produce?
No, I love it. I've seen that one running around on Twitter for ages, because I think it is a kind of universal problem where oftentimes we all think, like, I bet this is the week that I start just, like, washing and cutting up a ton of vegetables and just eating crudité all day in addition to whatever food I already like. And I'm just going to be incredible and full of fiber and just really on top of my life. And then, you know, the week happens and we devolve to our normal habits, which are more along the lines of, like, you know, eating peanut butter out of the jar, and then, you know, the version of ourselves that was eating crudité wilts and dies in our crisper drawer, and we're too ashamed to acknowledge that part of ourselves is not yet grounded in reality, so we leave the crisper drawer closed, and then, you know, Saturday night we're raiding the fridge and we open it and we throw it away furtively and we feel bad, and I want to break us all free of that cycle. Myself included.
Where do you break it? Do you break it at the grocery store? Do you break it at the grocery list? Where do you break that cycle? Where's the moment to interrupt it?
I'm genuinely hopeful that this is a step, because, you know, shedding light on a topic is always good. But yeah, I think it can help to generally get a sense of, like, what stuff did I buy last week that I actually ate and enjoyed?
Uh-huh.
And how often does that seem to happen? And maybe let's pick one piece of aspirational produce a week. Because that will feel more like, okay, my job this week is to eat 5 more radishes than usual. That's slightly more, like, within reach than, like, maybe today's the day that I add a giant tomato salad to every meal, even though, you know, I know myself, like, keep the aspiration within your grasp.
Yeah. Do you have aspirational pants? Because I hold on to aspirational pants from, like, 10 years ago.
I'm
thinking about letting them go.
I try more for my aspirational clothing not to be about fit, but just about style. So sometimes I have particular styles that I'm like, I don't know exactly when I'm going to become the kind of person who wears this, but I'm hopeful. But in my experience, aspirational sized clothing is just a great way to make myself feel unnecessarily sad And I don't want that for my life.
No, I know. I just moved and I'm like, this is the time to get rid of the size, whatever.
Yeah.
This is the time.
Yeah.
But aspirational style, wear that tomorrow.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
That person tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's way better than like when my body is sized a certain way, then my life will truly begin is often a way to make sure that you feel like you don't deserve a good life right now. And that's no good.
Yeah.
I want
or that your fiance is too handsome for you.
Oh my God. Like, come on. Woo! That one was just, you are a villain in a rom-com. You are the mom who is pushing, like, you're Lucille Bluth. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're afraid of being criticized, sometimes a diet is the best offense. Like, that is the road you're going down. And as funny as we all found watching, you know, like, compilational clips of the best Lucille Bluth zingers when we were 19, no one wants to be around that person. And that person does not actually get what she wants. She's not a good road for you to go down. So
I didn't even like watching that show because I was like, I don't like jerks in real life. Why would I watch jerk TV? So I don't even want Lucille Bluth levels, let alone.
I am right there with you. There with you. All right, my friend, thank you so, so much for coming on this show. Good luck with the many other shows that you are on right now. And, you know, just thank you for helping us wade through a lot of very complex situations.
Thank you for having me. And I can't wait for your next book.
I also can't. It is available for pre-order now. It is called Something That May Shock and Discredit You. And it's coming out in early 2020.
You think I'm kidding. I am pre-ordering it right this second.
Fantastic. There is currently an Amazon strike going on. So I recommend pre-ordering it on IndieBound or BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm going to go to my local bookstore.
Heck yeah. Appreciate it.
My local bookstore pre-orders.
You're such a virtuous citizen. Thank you again so, so much for coming on the show. Have a fabulous rest of the day. I hope you get some great leftovers. Bye. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/Dear Prudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/PrudiePod to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops. Thanks for listening. And on today's Plus segment.
I think that a lot of people are having these problems of just like, my, you know, mother voted for Trump and my partner is an immigrant and I can imagine X, Y, and Z. But the fact that this got borne out on such a personal level of like, I lost my job because of someone you voted for is just such an exacerbated form of something that I think is happening in a lot of places right now.
Yeah, and I think it's always important to clarify when a particular vote or a particular agency or a particular individual politician is doing something that materially affects your life and somebody else thinks of it merely as a thought exercise or an idea, to really dial into the specifics and to say, like, here is how this affects real people is a good thing. Again, it's often painful, but it's also often necessary. To listen to the rest of that conversation, join Slate Plus now at slate.com/PrudiePod.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.